Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 9th of November. Monday at 9 is All Things Political. We have much to talk about today. Some of it is horrifying, of course. We'll look at the story out of Fort Hood last week and ask, you know, when somebody snaps, what causes them to snap? Were there a lot of signs leading to somebody about to commit horrendous behavior? And why wasn't it noticed earlier? How does somebody who is so troubled even stay in the military? And what changes there may be in the military as a result of these horrendous events? The House passed health care reform Saturday night. Was pretty late into the evening, or the next morning, as the case may be in Washington, by a vote of 220 to 215, which was fairly close, so close that it signifies problems for health reform going through the Senate. We'll talk about that and many other topics this hour of the program. Our guest is Professor David Fott, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas. And our phone number and email addresses for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that would be okay. And that's talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Professor David Fott, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
So how does somebody, are we just really desperately in need of people in the mental health profession in the Army right now? Or how does somebody stay in the military when he's been given signs that something is pretty off with him?
I think in answer to your first question, yes, we are in need of more counselors because the strain on military personnel from repeated deployments to Afghanistan or Iraq or both, or the prospect, the uncertainty of concerning these deployments is enough to cause stress for many, not only for the personnel but also for their families. Each case where someone snaps, and happily there aren't that many of them, is an individual case. I think the evidence is still being collected in this case. There has to be a lot of care in talking about it because there's still the legal principle at work of innocent until proven guilty, although I think from what we hear, there's a lot of evidence.
Right. So the Army will begin a significant examination of itself. There will be more funds given to those soldiers, and it is hard for me to imagine being in war, going to war, and not having some real soul-searching questions when you get out or not having some psychological problems because of the horrors of war. Will we see, do you think, congressional hearings about this? Will we see more funding for more mental health professionals inside the military?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think Senator Lieberman has already announced that he wants to hold hearings in the Senate about this.
What do you think about his comment that this was an act of terrorism? Was he speaking out of turn?
I think so, at least for the time being, and from what I'm reading about the evidence, I think that you would want to be clear about this man's motivations, and I'm not sure that we are yet, or you would want to know that he did not act alone. I know there's been a little report over the weekend about a possible connection to a mosque, but I think that still hasn't been nailed down for sure, and what that means is unclear. I don't think the evidence is there, in short, to say that.
A mosque that two of the 9/11 hijackers had attended.
I believe that's the story.
Right. Well, it was a horrendous story, and it continues to be a great loss of life and injury among people in Wisconsin who were mental health professionals who were about to be deployed with this major?
Yes, yes. For people who knew him, and some of these people had worked with him, had seen him in more normal times. To see someone you know self-destruct in that way has to be troubling. Has to be something that you take to Iraq or Afghanistan with you when you go, and that doesn't make the service any easier.
The House passed health care reform over the weekend, Saturday night, actually, 220 to 215. Did you expect that the vote would be that close? And tell me if you think that it's going to be a difficult ride through the Senate.
I did expect the vote to be close because a lot of Democrats were starting to get cold feet. And the Republicans had pretty well locked themselves into opposition to the measure as long as they could maintain party discipline. And with one exception, they did. As far as bipartisan efforts go in the Senate, well, you have a couple of moderate senators, at least, in the Republicans from Maine, but at least one, if not both of them, is upset at Senator Reid, the majority leader from my state, inclusion of the public option in the final measure. So I don't know. I know he has already tried to carve out a middle position on that area by allowing an opt-out. I'm not sure what more he'll be able to do.
What is the big deal with a public option? You keep hearing, and you heard over the weekend, if we get this public option, it's just the first step. Before you know it, we're going to have government-run health care in America. Are there reasons for that kind of concern?
Well, some of that concern, on the one hand, forgets that Medicare is already a public option of sorts, or a public plan, that is. Some of that opposition also remembers that Medicare is not in good financial shape right now, and asks whether the government will be able to manage a larger system if Medicare is not on sound footing. So the opposition, I would say, is a mixture of exaggeration, even outright distortion or lie in the case of some, and legitimate concern, because government programs do tend to grow over the years instead of shrink, which makes what happened under President Clinton, that is, the allowing of states to experiment with welfare, all the more exceptional.
And what about this opt-out plan? I guess I don't fully understand how that would be implemented and whether or not it doesn't just defeat the purpose of some kind of public option. Is it a compromise? What exactly is it?
I think it is a compromise, and as far as I can tell, a gamble by Senator Reid that there would be enough states still participating to make it worthwhile, to be able to negotiate for to be able to get the rates that you would expect with a large base of participants.
It's hard to believe that people wouldn't be a little upset if they were living in a state that decided not to have a public option, and everybody else had it, and it worked well?
I think that's I think initially I wouldn't expect to see wide-scale opposition because the polls that I have heard about are pretty close. With, for example, in my state, a small majority of people favor having a public option. But if what you say comes true and the public option works well, then you'll see a lot more clamoring for it. But then you're more likely to see a lot more states change their minds and choose to participate.
Was there any big news, any big trend, Professor Fott, from the elections last week, the gubernatorial elections, the congressional election in upstate New York? Anything strike you?
It strikes me that if no matter how split your party may be, if you're one of two major parties in the United States, you're never that far away from power. I know that the Democrats held the majority in the House of Representatives for decades. Yes, that's true, but that is one of the benefits of a two-party system, that the party that does well in an election, as the Democrats did in 2008, can never afford to be complacent. It's hard to know because these were limited elections, but one thing they do is they get the attention of office holders. So you can bet that Senator Reid is studying what happened in the New Jersey governor's race. Senator Reid faces his own re-election with very low poll numbers, right, and eight Republicans running against him.
Oh my gosh!
In next year, and you can bet that he is at least looking at what happened to New Jersey Governor Corzine.
Uh-huh. Why are his poll numbers so low?
They have never been all that high in Nevada. He has done well enough to win. He's had extremely, for the most part, close election contests, including one in which he very narrowly beat the man who is now Nevada's other senator, John Ensign. He is not a charismatic speaker, for one thing. He is much more of a behind-the-scenes doer. And now that he has a position of leadership in the Democratic Party, he has to speak more and in a more ideological way than he had to before. Nevada's Democrats, like Nevada's Republicans, for the most part, tend to be moderate. The Republicans, there's a sizable segment of libertarians who many people would call extreme Republicans. But the Democrats tend to be moderate, and that also makes what he's trying to do with health care a challenge for him personally.
Sure. Let's welcome phone calls, and here is the number, 800-486-8655. Professor David Fott is our All Things Political guest today, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. The horrors at Fort Hood, we're talking about health care reform, of course, with the House vote over the weekend, the elections last week and whatever else you'd like to bring to this table. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The next hour of our program today, we're going to talk about Artie. Let's go to phone calls. Jim from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Hi. First off,
let's not forget President Obama earlier said that that public option was just a sliver of this health care reform, so we shouldn't get bogged down in it, if you can believe that. But also, both the Senate and the House bills seem to have tax increases for the middle class, which President Obama said would not happen. For instance, the FSA cap is only $2,300 now, and I have to pay in my high-value insurance plan $4,100 out of pocket, which I normally do because I hit that out-of-pocket total probably within the first quarter because of medical problems. So now I'm going to be taxed on that $1,800 difference, and I'm not making $1 million. Also, I'm going to be taxed on that high-value insurance plan. So is President Obama in a tight situation where he said that I will not, your taxes will not go up one dime?
Professor?
Yes, he is in a tough spot to keep that pledge. The limits for individuals and families were raised, at least in the House bill. I'm not quite sure where things stand in the Senate, but they've been just about doubled or tripled from what they were previously. So I think it's from the tax hikes were going to hit individuals at $280,000, and now it's $500,000, and families at around $300,000, and now it's $1 million. And I know that pleased one of Nevada's representatives, who is a moderate Democrat, who came out originally against the bill, but now says that she'll support it. But it's clear, would like to move on, would like to change the subject, mm-hmm. and start talking about jobs. I think that if my state is any indication, fatigue is starting to set in on this subject as well. And people would like to start talking about something else because they know that, as you say, when you get to the details, some people are going to be paying more.
So you don't make much money on the job, but you have a good health care plan.
Well, I have a good health care plan, but my $4,100 I've put into FSA for the last 2 years, and it's a lifesaver budgeting that over 12 months. Mm-hmm. And I get the extra benefit of the tax savings.
Right.
However, now they said that that's $2,300, and I'm going to have to pay tax on that $1,800. This isn't a frivolous thing. You have to spend that on medical care, which I definitely do.
Right.
And by budgeting it out over 12 months, that's a very big plus for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ripped away because the government says, huh, no, $2,300, that's it. You know, why? I'm under the impression the millionaires are paying for this. I'm not. Why would I?
Well, it ain't over till it's over. So you got the Senate still and a bill that's 1,900 pages, so I guess you can only wait and see what develops in the Senate.
And Reid says he will tax high-value insurance plans, which
right.
I'm assuming high-value means anything garnered by the unions, which I've a part of. That's going to be taxed.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Let's go next to Kasser, is it, from Germantown? Hi.
Good morning. Two things I wanted to bring up, and unfortunately, they both are related to the shooting in Texas. Kind of mind-boggling to me is this man who has killed 13 people and injured 30 and more people was born in this country. He was born in Virginia. He went to school here. The guy could barely speak any Arabic. Yes, he was a Muslim. But that does not mean that he's tired. Maybe he is, but how would we feel if this man was Jewish or Christian? I mean, when would we stop prosecuting the Muslims in general living in this country rather than taking a case-by-case situation? I mean, we need to stop talking about Muslims in general, and we should start looking at individuals. We cannot continue every 2 or 3 years. Something like this happens, and then all of a sudden, we as Muslims, who are very moderate and very peace-loving, are put in a pedestal, and we feel like we now have to defend ourselves. The second thing is that I wanted to bring up is I was waiting for Senator Lieberman to come up with another one of his drug things. The reason Al Gore lost elections was because of Lieberman, because 80% of the Muslims did not Lieberman primarily because of his overly zealous support of Israel when it comes to the Palestinian issues. And he keeps coming back with, I wish it Senator Lieberman will learn his lesson from the last elections and then what happened with him during these elections. He needs to act as a senator of his state rather than start making another investigation on terrorism. If this man is accused of terrorism, he should be prosecuted. He should be dealt with as a citizen of this country, not as a Muslim. This man is guilty. We already know that. Now, what happened is another thing. The army needs to investigate that. But we cannot continuously keep prosecuting Muslims in general.
Professor Fott.
Well, unfortunately, stereotyping is all too easy. And in a case such as this, when something like this happens, we want to make sense of it as quickly as possible. So we look for telltale signs, and then we can lump him into a class of people and treat him that way. And no, it's not fair. It's not based on a look at all the evidence, which would include all of the Muslims in this country. It's simply a kind of intellectual shorthand, and it's based on intellectual laziness too. And because of that, it's very difficult to uproot completely. And a lot of people fall victim to it, that kind of laziness, at one time or another. We all do, really, in some ways. Not about this case, but if you think about the many ways all of us engage in stereotypes in our lives, some of them fairly harmless, it's very difficult to stop.
Right. Thank you very much for your points, Kasser. We go to Willem from Colfax. Hi.
Hi. I also wanted to make a comment about Senator Lieberman. I read in the paper this morning that he couldn't in good conscience, as a matter of conscience, he wasn't going to allow this bill to come to a final vote because it includes this public option. You know, for someone like Senator Lieberman, who takes so much money from the insurance industry and from the pharmaceutical industry, to say something that I'm surprised that he has a conscience, that their job is to serve the people of this country. And I think that we should take away their insurance coverage until they come up with a plan for everyone's insurance coverage, because I don't think he pays his own insurance. The only people that like insurance in this country are people that either have it paid for by their employer or they never have to use it.
They pay something for their insurance. People in the government, we did this whole series on health care reform, so they certainly pay premiums for their insurance. But he's become this it's a matter of conscience. He's really become sort of a curmudgeon, hasn't he? I can't imagine too many people are very happy with him. And you wonder what's going on in his mind. What's he getting from all of this? What do you make of all of it, of him particularly, Professor Fott? What's he doing?
He is a politician who speaks from from conscience, I think, more than a lot of others do, and which isn't to defend everything he says, but especially now, he does not feel the... he feels, I think, more liberated because of his struggles with the Democratic Party. I think, if anything, he feels more liberated than he was before. And as for the public option, it would not shock me if the final measure, and again, remember, this has to go not only to the Senate, but to a committee, mm-hmm. A conference committee, which is where the real action will happen. Wouldn't shock me if that included forcing congressmen to engage in the public, whatever public option is passed. Maybe I'm showing a little too much time in the ivory tower there when I say that. They might manage to shield themselves from it, but I could see something like that, I think, gets a lot of popular support.
Well, I don't expect that the public option is going to be terrible. It's probably going to be pretty good, and that's why everybody's worried about it, right? That the other plans are not going to be as good or as popular, so everybody will want the public option.
Pretty good, but if you asked members of Congress to make a self-interested choice, would you rather keep the coverage that you have?
Right.
Or engage in this uncertain public option. I think I know what they say.
Well, I'd love to have them answer that. That would be interesting. Thanks, Willem, for your call. We go to Scott from Green Bay.
Good morning. Just a couple of quick comments. Senator Lieberman, his issue is debt. That's his concern. He can't see piling on another $1 trillion worth of debt and something that's going to grow. So that's the conscious point he comes from, is he just thinks that we don't have financial ability to pay for this. I wanted to make two quick points. One of them is looking at this vote in a different context. Everybody is always screaming for bipartisanship. The bipartisan vote on Saturday was no. I mean, you had 18% of the Democrats that said, no, this isn't a good idea. Only one Republican voted for it. So the bipartisan vote, and we all want bipartisanship supposedly, was no, this is not a good idea. I look at it in the context of, you know, George Bush got all the blame for, you know, not having enough vaccines for avian bird flu, and all of a sudden we don't have enough vaccines for the current pandemic that's going on, and government's known about that long enough. I mean, I don't think they have the ability to manage. Everybody thinks the public option is going to be good. We're a bankrupt nation, and I'm wondering why everybody thinks that the government can do such a better job at everything when, obviously, if you look at our financial situation, they can't do anything better. I think the government needs to be concentrating on jobs. I mean, you've got 10.2% unemployment. I mean, you've got 16% of the people actually looking for work, part-time people that don't have a job and want to work full-time, and it's going to continue to go up. I mean, we've got a stimulus package that stimulated nothing at all, and I have read it, and it was not stimulative.
All right, but let's get some response. Professor Fahd, I would agree that the administration needs to spend a lot more time on jobs. That is a frightening unemployment rate right now.
And in my state, it's even higher.
Is it?
Dependent in tourism as we are. We're over 13%.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. If we're not bankrupt as long as we can keep getting credit. And let's all hope that continues for some time, because we're going to need it. If that is Senator Lieberman's main concern, the debt, he's right to be concerned about it. The cost of this is something that we just can't, all we can do is estimate right now.
Thanks for your call, Scott. We have lines open if you'd like to join this All Things Political conversation. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email, that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we go next to Paul from La Crosse. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Gee, I'm glad I got on when I did, because I disagree completely with the previous caller. The majority was handed to the Democrats by the Republicans. I'm thinking about the New York 23rd, which everyone was making so much hay about, you know, 3 weeks ago, that this is where the conservatives were going to draw a line in the sand between themselves and the moderates. So they forced the moderate out, they put the conservative up, and instead a Democrat is elected. So when you look at that margin that we've got, one of those votes was Bill Owens. If they hadn't had the 23rd in New York, if they'd let the, you know, just said, okay, our guy didn't, Huffman didn't get the nod from the Republican committee chairman in that district, so we're going to support the Republican, they would have had one more vote. And the vote that the Republican that voted for it from Louisiana, if they'd put up a Halle Barber Republican for that seat, he never would have won anything. So because in search of spiritual purity, and this goes forward into next year's election, if, Professor, you wouldn't know, but we've got a Petri is a Republican congressman from the northern part of our state. He's really a good guy, but he's conservative, but a good guy, and he's worried about having an attack from his right flank. If things like this keep going in the Republican Party, they're going to hand next year's elections to the Democrats, because they can't see that if they're going to stop the Democratic legislation, they've got to have Republican votes. They have to win elections. And I'm afraid that the mayor of New York and the governor of New Jersey just don't have a vote on these matters.
Professor Fott.
Well, I agree. I think that the search for ideological purity is going to be a frustrating one for the Republicans and cost them a lot of votes if they carry it too far. The Democrats have been through this too in years past, and they've suffered because of it. Our two parties have to be big tents, welcoming different kinds of people, if the system is going to work the way it has before. And if the parties aren't big tents, then ultimately they can self-destruct. We can end up with splinter parties. And while that has certain advantages from the standpoint of representing more different strands of opinion, we can certainly look to other countries that have changed governments very often, Italy, Israel, and see the road that could eventually lead to.
Let's spend just a moment before we go. Thank you very much for your call, Paul. On political identification, when we talked about Democrats and Republicans, one of our earlier callers, and how really a bipartisan majority didn't pass health care, I'm wondering how this independent vote plays into all that we're talking about and this lowering identification with either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. The Republicans have less than 20%. The Democrats don't have a whole lot better, 33 or 32%. Independents are the key vote now in a lot of these elections and were a key constituency in getting Obama elected. Can you talk about them, their growing influence, and what it means for getting health care through and what it means for elections?
They're motivated. It seems to me that they're moved a lot by, in presidential election years, by who the presidential candidates are. But they're also moved by issues. And a lot of them fall into the camp of being more socially liberal or libertarian than a lot of Republicans are on social issues, but more fiscally conservative than, than Democrats are. But, of course, the last Republican administration in Congress we had was not all that fiscally conservative, was it?
No.
This is the kind of person that you have to appeal to when you're appealing to the independents. They have a lot of them already have some sort of health coverage, but they may be concerned about the cost of that coverage, and therefore be supportive of government doing something, at least to try to bring health care costs down, and yet concerned about the cost to government, which is ultimately the cost to us of what's going on.
More phone calls in a moment. One line is open if you'd like to speak on all things political. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program this Monday, we'll be talking about Artie, and our guest is science editor at National Geographic magazine, an extraordinary discovery, and we'll talk about where it was found and where she was found and what it means for our understanding of where we came from. All right, two more of your phone calls. 800-486-8655. Bashir from Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. I have a question and a comment on Lieberman. Well, the question isn't on Lieberman, but the comment is, I think that he isn't really driven by conscience, because let's face it, few of people in Congress are. But I think that he recognizes the chance to see himself get a lot of publicity and a lot of people to listen to his big mouth. That's what I see there. And having that kind of publicity is good for a congressman. But so comment on that if you will. But my question is, how really does this process work? I mean, I see tons of votes and tons of committees and all this stuff, but how does it work? How does it work how does this merging process work that's going on, and this closed doors versus more committees, and how will it really end up getting on the desk from this point forward?
Well, as to your first point, I do not know Senator Lieberman personally, so I guess I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt. On your second question, any time that the House of Representatives and the Senate pass bills that differ from each other, what's called a conference committee, consisting of members from both houses, has to be appointed to work out the final to work out the details. They try to reach, usually do by hook or by crook, reach some sort of compromise that then has to go back and be passed by the two houses individually, and it can be a very complicated process. Because, of course, the Senate has to have 60 votes to prevent a filibuster, not once but twice, but before the conference committee and after the conference committee. So Senator Reid has to have and hold on to those 60 votes, and twice, and that's not going to be easy.
Do you have any idea of what the administration has been doing behind the scenes?
Well, I've been reading that I think Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff, has been meeting with Senator Reid, and that's the sort of cooperation that you would expect to be going on. I know that the administration has been faulted by some for leaving as much of this process to Congress as it has. That is, President Obama has not come forward and said, look, here are the details. I want A, B, and C, even A through Z in this plan. Whether that was a good strategy is still up in the air. So far, it's working. It has the advantage of involving more people in the process. If you get something done, more people have a stake in it and can plausibly claim credit for it. And the president knows that that would be a good thing if you can pull it off.
Thank you for your call. Rich from Sullivan is next. Hello, Rich.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I know the good morning, everybody. I know the program is not callers debating each other, but I just wanted to respond to Scott, who had called earlier to point out that the government is our country is bankrupt, and linked it to the government being unable to manage much or anything. I'm not going to misquote him, but some of us out here are thinking that our government is bankrupt because a large segment of the financial sector, a large segment of the business community, raked in money for themselves, still continue to rake in money for themselves under the bailout plan, and that it isn't the government's fault, except for its lack of oversight during an eight-year period or longer, but it is essentially a corrupt political system where lobbyists buy the best Congress people, representatives and senators that they possibly can purchase through lobbying efforts and through financial contributions to campaigns. And I really do think an awful lot of us would like to see some of the perpetrators of the financial mismanagement of our major banking institutions in jail. If anything, President Obama has turned out to be far too timid for us. Dave Berkman said on a program where he was a guest that he thought he was voting for another FDR, and he's beginning to suspect that he may have voted for a Millard Fillmore or someone like that. I really do think Scott doesn't represent all of us out here, nor do I, but the idea that our country is in financial trouble because the government in Medicare or elsewhere mismanages money, I find I can't let a comment like that pass without calling in. Sorry for going on so long.
No, it's all right, Rich. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Professor Fott.
The weak presidents of the mid-1800s were trying to cling to the past. It took an Abraham Lincoln to know that we could not stay the way we were, and we could not be too condemnatory of those who had profited by injustice in the past, particularly slave owners. I think President Obama fits more into the Lincoln camp in that respect. He wants to look forward. He has too much else that he wants to do, and he does not want to be consumed by the recriminations about past matters. I think that makes a lot of sense, as long as lawbreakers don't get off scot-free.
Right. Thanks very much for the call, Rich. The Times had an interesting piece yesterday, The Words That Once Soared, and I'm wondering what you think about this. In a nutshell, it talks about whether or not his oratorical magic has begun to fade. Does the White House rely too heavily on his skills on the stump to advance his priorities?
I didn't read that piece, but I'm tempted to agree with it, because the skills of governing are very different from the skills of campaigning. I think that when he's the president, his rhetorical skills are best served by conserving them and using them on rarer occasions. This was not so much a problem for presidents of a pre-television era, but now, and especially with as many channels as there are, the temptation is for the president to want to go on all of them, especially if he's a good speaker.
All of them except Fox.
Most of them, I should say.
Yes.
I stand corrected. When really he's best served by saying less, no matter who he is. But it's harder for a president who speaks well to follow that advice.
Yeah, he does speak well. Sherry from Wausau, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love all things political.
Thanks.
I just wanted to go back to the public option, because the CBO has said that the public option will not add to the deficit, and we will become bankrupt if we leave our health care as the status quo. I do believe President Obama when he says that he cannot fix the economy without fixing health care. Health care costs are going up far faster than people's wages, and I think we have to address it, get it done now, and then go to jobs. This man has so much on his plate, and he's trying to do everything that we've been hit with and that he inherited, and so far I'm behind him, because it doesn't take a year to fix all these global problems that we're dealing with right now. That's the point I just wanted to make.
Thanks, Sherry. Professor Fott?
National bankruptcy is something that we can all hope is still a long ways away. Personal bankruptcy has hit all too many Americans in recent years, and of course a good bit of that comes from health care costs. Even people who are living fairly comfortably right now, and I guess especially people who are living fairly comfortably right now, don't realize how much they spend on health care costs. How many people actually write down at the end of the year, tally up the amount that they have spent in premiums and copays and so on? And I think that the administration could have made a better case for health care reform by having one big speech. I know, if not the president, I mean, that might contradict the advice I gave in my previous comment, but someone give a speech saying, look, here is John Q. Citizen. Here is a typical example of how much John Q. Citizen spends on health care, and he doesn't even know it, how much he's spending. This is how much we need reform that will cut costs.
Thank you, Sherry, for the call. We have about 45 seconds left. Tony from New Berlin, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, so excuse my my ineptness here. I have an extreme frustration with what's going on in the world today. You know, it seems to me that, boiled down, we've got two major issues. One is jobs, and the other one is the political stability. in the world. You know, in the years that I've been on this earth, we've gone through National Socialism, we've gone through socialism of all different types, including communism. But the one that really frustrates me today is the fact that it seems obvious to me. Every day we have suicide bombers bombing each other's mosques. We've got parents that are driving over there.
We've only got about 10 seconds, Tony.
And we have all sorts of related issues. Salman Rushdie was... Mullahs had decided that he needs to be eliminated. The Pope had to apologize. And it seems to me that the question is so obvious, and yet learned people...
Okay, what's the question, Tony? We're out of time.
...to address the situation. The situation with the Brigadier General is...
Okay, well, there are a lot of questions there. We'll have to leave them for another program. Thanks, Tony, for your call. Professor Fahd, thank you so much for the hour.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
All things political this hour. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing the hour and to Katie Mattson for on-air production from our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for your calls. News coming up. We'll return.